Welcome to the Giselle Show podcast with friends, where we are making stuff up, being real and talking about it. I'm so happy to be here and I'm so happy that you is here with me. And today we have two wonderful guests with us. Today we have John Stahl, who is a writer, director, producer. He's also a new father and a really nice guy. Hello, John.
Hi. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you are here too.
Thank you.
And also with us today is Mr. J. Keith Van Straten. He's a comedian, an actor, improviser, storyteller, comedy host. And you're not going to believe this, he's also a really nice guy.
Thank you.
What are the chances of that?
Probably pretty good, since we're doing this for free.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. But I made some little quiches, so there's that.
Right. I don't really want the quiche.
Okay.
I like quiche to be big. So the size, I know I could have five pieces and have it be equal to one large slice, but the smallness.
Wow. It looks like I really blew it on the quiches, you guys.
Kind of, yeah.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. Hopefully the show will pick up from here. I wanted to talk about a little bit of something. So I have my friend, Fred.
Sounds made up. I'm not sure that...
You don't believe
you
the name.
You had a little hitch.
Yeah. Who's named Fred? Who's named Fred anymore?
Do you know, I happen to know so many people named Fred.
I know three, actually. Three
I have
off the top of my head.
Fred.
I could produce
three Freds for you if I had to.
Yeah,
push came
there
to
you
shelf.
Go.
Yeah, maybe a fourth if I had to.
And I can do another three. How many do you have?
Just one.
So that's seven?
Yeah, but some of them might be the same.
Oh, yeah.
It might be some Fred crossover.
We're going to have to do a Venn diagram of the
Fred overlap.
Yeah.
Fred Armisen, he feels like my friend.
Oh, that's a fourth.
He do feel like a friend.
Orlando.
Though he never called me.
No.
I don't know why. Well, anyway, this friend of mine, Fred, he's a therapist. And he was teaching to me a new way of communicating about my feelings. Because, you know... Sometimes when somebody upset you, this is the way the new way of communicating go. You're supposed to do this. If somebody upset you, you don't say, "Hey, you did a bad thing. You are bad. You're bad and you behave badly and you're bad." Instead, you say, "When you did this thing, I felt hurt or I felt sad or I felt humiliated," whatever you feel. You use I statements and you share how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred tell me in this way, then the other person maybe don't have to get defensive.
Mm-hmm.
They don't feel attack. And then they can begin to be open to understanding how you feel. And in this way, you build empathy. And in this way, you heal the world. And there's world peace. So it sounds like a really good idea.
Wow.
So I say, I will try this, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I've been trying it, and I have to tell you,
yeah,
it's really hard.
It's so hard.
It is so hard.
Wait, are you saying you've been trying this and the world has not been healed?
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
It's slow going.
Yeah.
The world take a long time to heal.
Sure.
But also, it's just, I'm very used to, I don't have a lot of interpersonal drama in my life, you know, lucky for me. My friends is really good people, and I'm just very lucky that way. But when there has been interpersonal drama, I'm used to the old way of saying something about it. Like, you know, you did something bad, you're wrong.
Yes.
Sure.
Like to judge the other person.
Sure. Especially when you're right. That's
yeah, that's
right. That's the best time to do that.
And I love to be right.
You're speaking my language. May I quickly?
Yeah, please.
My wife, whom I love dearly and hopefully will be listening to this, is has had me learn to speak exactly as you're saying when I want to communicate for two reasons. One, she is a psychiatrist.
Oh.
But more than that, she is
you're in trouble now.
She is
you can't
who's
get away with anything.
No, she's someone who's been in, I'm sure she doesn't mind me saying this, it's made her a better person. She's been in therapy for years.
Yeah.
And in fact, together we have been in therapy. And so I've had to learn, she's had years of practice of how to speak and communicate and say I this and I'm feeling that. And it's so unnatural to me. And yet, whenever I do it, it works. It works. It just never feels natural to me. It feels forced. It feels like I have to dig deep and I don't like it. And yet, it's probably been very, very good for our marriage. But I can't stand it because I just want to judge. And
yeah,
like, yes.
Judging is easy.
It never
and you know
feels
why
natural.
It's really hard? I bet this is why... because you're making yourself vulnerable.
Yes.
Like you say, you have to dig deep. You have to lay yourself bare to share your feelings. And that's scary. That's really scary. Always, don't you think?
Yes, of course. And then sometimes the feeling is hungry or something. It's not, there's not much to it, and you have to, you know,
or I feel annoyed,
and that's not a, that's too broad, but I don't know how to say it in any other way.
Right.
Then, and I want to say, you annoyed me.
Right.
You're so, you were really not, you know, nothing specific to my wife, anybody. You were annoying. Oh God, you're so annoying. But no, that's a problem for you, John. And I'm like, but no, you're the one being annoying.
Yeah, it's a whole new way of looking at it.
Frustrating.
Taking your own responsibility for your feelings, being vulnerable for sharing them, letting people see the inside of you and your own workings and your own issues, you know, and being honest about that. What was that?
I wish it didn't work, by the way. This starting with me and I feel, and it works. It's so annoying that it works.
Well, I tried it. It does not work with my cat. Like, I tried to tell him, like, when you're peeing on my clothes right now,
it makes me feel like you don't respect me
or makes me feel like this place smells. And it just does not seem to be as an effective method as the judgment and blame and yell one. But I don't know. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
I think you need to.
You need to teach your clothes to speak up in that situation.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah.
You know what I need? I gotta bring Fred over.
Your shirt have to say, "When you peed on
when
me."
When you peed on me,
I felt peed on.
Wet and stinky. All right, I'm going to try that next
time. There you go.
So this is, they say this is the way to go for real connection. You know, this this is the way to build empathy and real connection within your relationships. So yeah, it's something for us to work on. And I was thinking about this vulnerability in terms...
Spell that right now.
Wait, you got me all hung up. V
yes.
As in victory.
Yes.
U-L-N-E-R-A-B-I-L-I-T-Y.
As soon as you got to the L, I knew you had it.
Then I was smooth sailing home.
I was so excited for you.
I just had to make...
Good job.
I just had to par 18 for the win.
Yes.
And I did it.
Perfect. Sorry to interrupt.
Phew.
Sports metaphor.
Because Helmut had on the Masters this weekend. It was pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Willett's.
Finish.
Will it be victory for Willett? Mm-hmm. And it was. Will it win? Will it did?
Golf.
You just ruined his victory with that horrible pun.
I have to do it. Quick shout out. We got a tweet from one of our listeners, Adrian Ford, who pointed out she was married to a Fred.
Oh. Was, past tense.
Yeah, was, so.
Fred, my cousin Fred is divorced. Fred marriages never last.
Oh,
wow.
Maybe that is the thing.
Don't tell that to the Flintstones.
And Adrian is listening with her daughter Poppy from Byron Bay, Australia.
Hi.
Hello.
To Australia.
Good day.
Cool. Good day.
Good day.
Yes.
I love that name, Poppy. I've come across
as a new father,
you mentioned, I believe. I have a 9-month-old daughter. Her name is Sophie, and now I'm starting to interact with people with other children, and I have come across a few people with Poppies, and I love it, and it
it's
makes
a
me want to
name don't you?
A future child of mine, Poppy, yes.
I've met 4 different people in Los Angeles named Poppy, all of whom are blonde Australian ladies.
Isn't that interesting? And I happen to know that this puppy is also blonde, and she's in Australia.
That's where
right
they make
now.
Them. Yep.
Well, good for that.
Well, if she comes to LA, she'll have company.
That's good. That's a nice import. All right, Poppy, come on over.
Yes, please, Poppy.
So
the Giselle podcast, I believe, will pay for your airfare.
Your passage.
We need a sponsor.
Yes.
Who could we be sponsored by?
Qantas?
Yes!
Yes! Perfect.
I got to call them up. Listen, Qantas, have I got a deal for you? We have a listener base of 150.
You can put your entire listenership
on a plane. You guys, if you is listening now, let's do it. Let's all get on Qantas together. That would be so much fun. But we was talking about vulnerability, and I wanted to say, let us segue this into artwork. Being vulnerable in your artwork.
Sure. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, that in specifics. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's true.
Say more about the vulnerability first.
It's important. Yeah. Well,
I think because, well, I interrupted you, but yeah. I think if you want to say something meaningful, and that's what we do want as artists,
sure,
you have to be real. You have to speak from your heart.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, I have a little twist on it, if I may. By the way, if I may, I'm in a writer's group, and one of our ongoing jokes is we had a script we were working on, which, of course, I was telling Jay Keith before the show that our writing has all faded. We started out as a writing group 10 years ago. In my case, I joined the group a little bit late and we've fizzled out. We're now a supper club, but we collaborated on a script maybe, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago. And the working title that was the joke title, but it was semi-serious, was If I May. And that was it. It was because it was a whole rash of these movies out that were like, there was one called Everything Else, and there's all these. Some were Woody Allen, some were Nora Ephron. They just didn't have anything tangible to grasp in the title. Mm. So If I May felt good. Anyway, If I May.
I think you should pick up on that.
One day.
Do it. So If You May.
This speaks a little bit to what you were just saying. It's a little bit different, but I actually am going to drop something on the podcast that I'm happy to say I'm going to do, and it comes out of a place of vulnerability. There, I'm going to direct a documentary. I'm moving to New York this summer. Sadly, I'm leaving Los Angeles and my writers group, who I will miss dearly. But I'm going to be in New York City for 1 year, and I am going to direct a documentary. There is a classmate of mine who I've always been endlessly fascinated with, in a non-stalkerly way.
What's it about?
It's about this. It's going to be a character study documentary. Just this guy, his name is Jacob, and he is endlessly fascinating to me. He is a medical doctor. He is a lawyer. He has two other master's degrees. He is the most prolific creative writer I know, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, I was saying to myself, somebody should do a documentary about him. And I decided I should do that. And it's felt scary to say that. I felt very, very vulnerable to say, I think I want to make a feature length, or I think it'll be feature length documentary on this person.
Then you know you was on the right track.
And I said to my wife, Wendy, I said, I think I just need to do it because it feels a little scary. And I know that a lot of time I hear artists of, you know, whatever art it is, say, if something feels scary and it feels like it's out of your comfort zone, that's
the thing to do.
Often the thing to do. And it feels right to say that.
That's
so I'm
great.
I'm going to plunge in.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Does he know?
Oh, that's the funny thing. Yes, I was thinking, I got all excited, and then I thought, oh yeah, I guess he has to be in on it. And I emailed him, and he's you know,
That would have been a big hurdle.
That would have been a, right.
I'm really excited about what I want to share with you next, because speaking of this vulnerability, one of our listeners, Senor Smoke, he's a really great guy, very clever. And I said to him, Senor Smoke, please to submit 100 words. You know, we do this thing where we have people submit 100 words, just a brief paragraph of creative writing. It's a way to just do a little bit of creative writing, and it's so small, just 100, 220 words, so it don't feel so scary. And Senor Smoke, he put up a little bit of a big fight, but then he do it. And he sent me this story. It's more than 100 words. It's a beautiful story. And I'm so proud of him. And I really love what he did that I want to share it with you now. So this is Senor Smoke's story. And it was based on the prompt At the Station. I knew this was the last time I was going to see her. I could hear the whistles of the train off in the distance as the engines load into the station. She wasn't my wife, my significant other, or even a really close friend at this point. But I knew I had to confront her about that conversation we had years ago. The cabs unloaded in front of Union Station in almost rhythmic fashion. I stood in front of the steps, smoking, with my hood pulled up. No one was going to notice me unless I wanted them to. Scanning the patrons exiting the cars unloading at the curb, I waited. Her dad told me she was going out in the 11 o'clock and it was soon arriving. Would there even be time for me to say all that was boiling inside me? There! I see the outline of her father's car as it pulls up to the curb. Do I run up to the car and start my vigorous dialogue? I must be patient. So I steady my legs and I put out my cigarette. Pulling my hood down, I enter into the arena of busy passengers, hoping to get lost amongst the crowd. Thinking I have but mere moments before the answers, along with my once good friend, will be gone. I see her father giving her a big hug and whispering something to her before she turns away from her past. But she knows I'm there. I can see her. We make eye contact from across the crowd at the entrance. I can tell that she isn't surprised by me, more reassured or captivated by my presence. She is face to face with me before I even take a step. She pushes me in the chest, saying, "Hey, you, I'm glad you're here. My dad told me there's somebody who wanted to see you before you left, and I'm glad it's you." Without even a second thought, I start my inquisition. "What do you remember about that night we almost drowned?" She looks at me blankly. I ask, "Do you remember what you said to me after that wave knocked us both off?" She turns away. "All I want to know is if it's true. If it was true." I ask again. Not looking at me at all now, she starts, "Well, not all of it, but most of it." Turns to look me deep in the eye and almost whispers, "It was the truth that I loved you, but you weren't the person I needed in my life." I turn away sharply, with my toes lifting off the ground. My left foot knows what's happening before my brain has a chance to respond. I'm walking away. If this was the solace that I was granted, then I don't need it.
Wow.
Mm. Very, very beautiful, Senor Smoke. I feel a great vulnerability in that story.
Sure.
I felt the longing of the narrator, and there was something just so visceral and real about it. I really believe every moment of it.
I'm wondering what was said, because there were things, the I love you was addressed, but yeah. I think other things were not. So I'm left wondering what else was said that
right.
was not
what,
true.
What happened back
was
then?
Was there
on
really
the...
a wave, or was that a metaphor?
Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of like... Part of me was like, yeah, I want to know what happened back then with the wave and the conversation and how they fell out and did not see each other for so long or what happened. But then part of me was like, I like it vague.
Oh, the ambiguity was powerful.
Really lovely. Mm-hmm. Because what comes through is the longing, the narrator's longing. And I really feel that.
Well done, Senor Smoke.
Well done, Senor Smoke. That was beautiful. J. Keith.
Hello.
We have so happy to have you with us. Ladies and gentlemen, I tell you a little more. J. Keith Van Stratten.
That's me.
He has been called a local hero by the LA Weekly magazine.
Oh, yeah. It's more of a newspaper, but sorry.
I don't disagree. He's a sketch comedy.
Wait, you don't disagree with the hero part or with the newspaper part?
Any of it.
Okay, good enough.
I just try to get along.
Well done.
He's a comedy sketch, a sketch comedy. He's a standing up comedy. He do hosting for Comedy Central TV game show called Beat the Geeks.
Oh, that was a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, he do hosting, live hosting of the J. Keith Van Stratten show.
Oh, that was a long time ago,
long
too.
Time LA favorite. He do sure. What's My Line live on stage.
Oh, that was a good one.
He do the Fix Up show.
Sure, classic.
He's been on a lot of TV shows. I'm not going to name them all. What was your favorite one? But you don't want to single out one or the others might feel bad.
No, I'm sure
you love them all.
I'm sure they all are as equally happy that they cut me.
He do hosting, he do sitcoms, sure. He do writing for TV shows, he do storytelling and improvisation all around Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Currently he's got several projects in various stages of development.
I do?
Yeah, industry friend of mine told me that.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's nice of them.
He's an avid Scrabble player.
That's true.
And an Angels fan.
Yes,
and a cat lover.
That's true as well.
And he have a beautiful story he's going to tell us.
Well, I don't know about beautiful, but it's
okay, we something. Be the judge of that.
Okay, now?
Now, go all right. For it, ladies and gentlemen.
Can I just say, it's been a pleasure watching J. Keith respond to all the accolades. If I may do a quick recap.
If I may.
If I may. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Eh? Huh. Yeah. That was good. Uh-huh. I don't know. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
It's like listening in a mirror.
You are a really good mimic.
Thank you.
Impressionist. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Jakey Van Staten.
Thank you. Oh, you guys. Come on, please, sit down. I am recently returned from a trip to Buenos Aires, during which I spent most of my time feeling embarrassed about why I was there. I didn't go to Argentina to see the sights, learn to tango, or hunt Nazis. I flew almost 6,500 miles to see a show. Three shows, three concerts of songs from the musical Next to Normal, sung by a combination of its Argentinian cast, Casi Normales, and a reunion of its original Broadway cast. I love the show. I had the time, I had the airline miles, so I went to South America. I've tried many times to explain to people and to myself why I love Next to Normal. In fact, it was just over 4 years prior that I was trying to explain to people why I was going to Toronto to see the final shows of the Next to Normal North American tour. Ah, North America. It seems so quaint now. I've now just accepted that I love this show. Knowing why isn't important. What's important is that when I see it, I experience something. I feel something. I feel everything. What's difficult is feeling it alone. So before deciding to go on this pilgrimage to Buenos Aires, I tried to find some like-minded weirdos to go with me. I have almost 5,000 Facebook friends, and none responded to my post seeking a seatmate. I searched for Facebook fan groups, tweeted at Casi Normales, and the dormant Broadway show's Twitter account. I even wrote the U.S. Embassy in Argentina, seeing if they knew of a visiting American contingent. Apparently, I was it. Solo diplomacy. Hoping to have some sort of an in, I contacted a guy I know who runs a pop culture review site that exists almost exclusively so he can get free press tickets to movies and concerts. He instantly went from weasel to genius as he was able to contact the PR for the Buenos Aires Theater and arrange a press ticket for me for the final night. I'd be a real writer then, but for the first two shows, I was a civilian. Sitting in the theater on the first night of the show, my ears were NSA satellites, eavesdropping on every conversation around me, desperate to pick out some English. How could I be the only American? I never thought I'd miss hearing, "Oh my God, Dakota, why don't you just text him?" But I did. The show was great, full of nervous energy, even some gaffes, and despite being presented as a concert and not a play, drama. Whereas I was used to seeing these characters from the dozen or so times I'd seen the show, here they were holding handheld mics, wearing evening attire, and oh yes, often speaking Spanish. This made the songs the real stars, and they shone bright into my eyes and heart. Without the context of dialogue, plot placement, sets, and props, it was up to the songs to do the heavy lifting. And they did. I got chills and laughs and tears. And the second night was even better. More polished, with added harmonies and a more sensible distribution of songs between the American and Argentinian actors. And on the third night, when an email from some dude in the valley convinced the PR department of Teatro Astral that I was a legit reviewer, things started to get special. My seats before had been okay, but tonight I was escorted to a box seat that hung over where I'd been sitting the night before. I would not have been surprised to see the Pope sitting behind me. He wasn't. But a young lady was, and she spoke English, and she'd seen the show the last two nights too. I asked her everything I wanted to know about the Buenos Aires cast and drank in her answers like a fine Malbec. She couldn't believe I'd come all the way from California, but instead of saying I was crazy, she said I was wonderful. And before we all get too carried away, I'll tell you her name is Nina, she was 19, and her boyfriend was working backstage. Nina exhibited all the excitement that I was too embarrassed to let out. She introduced me to the people in the next box, actual reviewers from an actual theater review website, a very popular Buenos Aires destination called Chapeau Argentina, which professionally translated means Argentina hat. And to the man who arrived to our box just before curtain. Nita had us exchange buenas noches as she explained that this fine gentleman was the one who had turned Next to Normal into Casi Normales, the founder of our feast. Afterwards, the pair from Chapeau Argentina insisted I meet and interview members of the Argentinian cast. They wanted photos with me. To them, I was part of the story. They weren't embarrassed that I was there. They were honored. They thanked me for coming. Nina disappeared after telling me where the American cast was staying and suggested I wait for them in their hotel lobby. Fortunately, even as a superfan, I knew that's not how I wanted to spend my final day in Argentina. Instead, I walked to Feria San Telmo, shopped the flea market, ate some chorizo off the back of a truck, and proudly spent every last peso I had. There's one line for all international flights at the Buenos Aires airport. It twists and turns on itself like a centipede. And that's where I see in front of me, inching towards me, what looks like the two female American stars of the show. The tip-off could have been that Alice Ripley is wearing sunglasses indoors at night. But to be sure, I checked her Instagram feed and see that these are the same frames that she had in selfies earlier in the day. I had to decide whether to say anything, and if so, in what capacity. Am I a super fan, a colleague, a reporter, some combination of two or three?
The line moves soon, and we've crossed axes. We're now in the same straightaway, and I have to wait for the cue to twist again. Minutes pass. I dig into my carry-on bag and move the digital recorder from the side pocket to the top for easy access, just in case I can get an interview. I take deep breaths. I pretend to be busy on my phone. What does a writer look like? I pretend to email my editor. The line moves and we're next to each other, separated only by the ribbon of a retractable line divider. I try not to stare. I take a breath. I say nothing.
Oh.
I figure I have one more S-curve to go. We'll be face-to-face one more time. This time I'll do it. But the final stanchions send the stars to the immigration agents as I'm left behind waiting. By the time I get my passport stamped, I've lost them. I wander the obligatory route through the duty-free shop, past the tiny liquor bottles, around the perfume, through the stacks of t-shirts. I don't see them anywhere. It's just as well, I think. They performed and I enjoyed. Our transaction is complete. Still, just to check, I wander to the gate for the flight leaving to New York. No sign. Oh well, I resign and head to my gate. And then, just like that, they are walking toward me in the concourse. Alice Ripley and Jennifer Damiano and their travel friends. And I don't have time to think anymore, and I find myself saying, "Excuse me, I just have to tell you, I saw the shows here and you were phenomenal." "You saw the shows?" Alice asked. "Yes, you saw the shows here." "Where did you come from?" "Los Angeles." "And you came here just to see the shows?" "Yes," I replied. And in that moment, where she could have laughed or rolled her eyes or called security, she shook my hand, looked me right in the eyes, and said, "That's amazing. Thank you." And then, Alice Ripley, Tony winner for her role as Diana Goodman in Next to Normal, target of my harmless but dedicated obsession and admiration, creative genius whose performances gave me chills and laughs and tears, goddess who I'd viewed hours earlier from a dark chair as she shone on the bright stage, sat down with me in the low chairs of a Buenos Aires airport bar for an on-the-record interview. After some pro forma questions and answers, I asked what had really been on my mind the whole time. "So, just for the record, do you think I'm crazy for having come to Buenos Aires to see Next to Normal?" "No, not at all," she said. "I'm so pleased and honored and touched that you go all that way just to take it in. And this is not by accident that we ran into each other." And in an instant, the war was over. Something became very clear and instantly accepted. If Alice effin' Ripley tells me it's okay to love this show like I do, that's good enough for me. And with that, I walked to the gate, got on the plane, and sat in my seat for the long journey home. And I haven't apologized for loving or feeling or flying since.
Yeah. Oh, it was like a roller coaster. The S curves and seeing them, was you gonna say anything and then you don't, and I'm heartbroken and then you do. Oh boy.
Wow. Just like a roller coaster.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
That was great.
Thank you, Dizelle.
So, I thought that was light and fun and touching and interesting. I don't know the play. What is this?
Well, that's a whole other essay where I try to explain what that was.
Yeah,
what the play
I don't
is
know either. What it's decade? Called
well,
Next
it's
to a, Normal?
It's from the 2000s. It's from the 2010s.
Okay.
It's a rollicking musical theater romp about mental illness.
Okay.
Oh.
And electroshock therapy and a family dealing with a woman's mental illness. It won the Pulitzer, which you might not think that there is a Pulitzer for musicals, which there is not. It won the Pulitzer for drama. As well as several Tonys. And I can recite the entire cast recording from the top if you want. Here we go. No.
Is there one playwright? Or is there multiple people?
It was written, but the music and lyrics were Tom Kitt and Brian Yorkey.
Okay. Great.
Wow. That's so this was a true story.
Yeah. Yes.
That would have been a hell of a fictional story.
Full of specifics.
Yes. I mean, you know, you take artistic license for a few things here or there. I don't, you know.
He never went to Argentina.
Yeah, yeah. It was actually Pasadena, but it all happened in Pasadena, but it was, you know, it's a different area.
Other than that, it was all true.
Right. And also it was my uncle who did this, but
well, it's a great story,
and you
have many, many phrasing turns that are delightful and charming and make me giggle.
Well, thank you.
Funny words you put together in a funny way.
I like that. That is a very succinct description of what I try to do. Funny words that I try to put together in a funny way.
You can use that for your bio.
Thanks.
I give it to you. So, Jackie, earlier this week,
we
was talking about today and what we was going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you mentioned to me this sort of TED type talk that you gave about the inspiration myth.
Right. Yes. Well,
I love this idea, and I want you to share it with us, because when you shared it with me, I really liked it.
Well, thank you. Okay. Well, basically, what it is, I think people have this idea that creativity or inspiration that you have to wait for it to happen, or that if you don't feel inspired, you can't come up. That you can't be creative, or if you don't know what you're inspired to do, that you can't be creative. And there's a third thing that I can't remember. But I think there's this idea that or I think also that only certain people are inspired. Only certain kinds of people can be creative. And I think that's all nonsense. Can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all nonsense. And
drop the mic. It's over.
It's all good.
That was good.
The creativity can come just from deciding that you're going to be creative, just deciding to come up with something. I think your great Wheel of Death that you do on the show, I think, is a great example of that. First of all, anyone can be creative. I don't think it just takes some certain special people. Anyone can do it. But also, I think most of it, what it is giving yourself the time and the space to do it. And yeah. That, whether you take a writing prompt, whether you... take a lyric from a song that you like and then write a completely different song based on that lyric, or there's a million different kinds of things that you can do, but that even if all you come up with is one little turn of phrase or one little nugget of something that you like, that can then be the next thing that you use. I think this idea that people have if your complete great American novel doesn't come out of you in one sitting, that is not going to happen, or that whatever you come up with isn't worthy or isn't worth something, is what gets a lot of people stuck and a lot of people not creating stuff. And so when I've led writing workshops or when I'm trying to come up with something of my own, I try to take steps to sort of short circuit that, and to allow people and allow myself to just discover something that I didn't know I was there, that I didn't know was there. So yeah. that's sort of the basics of that.
That's really, really great. Well put.
Thank you.
And it's just so nice to be reminded of this, that you don't need, like you say, you don't need to be any kind of special person. Mm-hmm. You don't need any kind of special muse or anything. Mm-hmm. You can just start right now with what you have. Mm-hmm. Look around the room, pick one of the objects, pick a word, start.
Even if you just make yourself, let's say if you're a writer, write one page of something, or write, a certain 100 words of something.
Yeah.
You're guaranteed, you might think like, oh, well, what's that going to do? You will guarantee to have something that you wouldn't have had before.
Yeah.
If you write a notebook page, you're guaranteed to finish that with one more page of writing than you would have had before.
Yeah.
And even if you can find, like, again, one phrase or one idea from that, I mean, that's then the craftsmanship. That's then, that's the sort of the work then of the artist, is what do you do with that? But then, you've got a painter can't paint if you don't have paint.
Right.
If you don't have a palette. And so it's like, to me, I would much, as a, the way I write, I would much rather have something to, you can't edit something that hasn't been written already. Mm. You can't polish a, I'm losing my metaphor. You can't paint a pot that you haven't thrown. You can't fix the corner of a painting that you haven't started painting.
You can't make a pot without the clay.
Sure, that too.
You can't make a kugel
right?
without the noodles.
That's right. Well, I know some people who make a kugel without a noodle.
What?
Yeah, I think you can
potato.
Make it with a potato, yeah.
Potato kugel.
Potato
yeah.
kugel?
Yeah.
Yes. Where
which,
have
which,
I
is a, which is a great lesson also. Sometimes you don't even know what you need to make the recipe
there
that you
go.
Want.
Yeah. Well, I like a good noodle kugel.
Oh, well, noodle kugel is by far the superior kugel.
Yeah, I would think, because the flavor, the potato maybe is a little too bland.
It is very bland. It needs to be topped with applesauce. I never liked my grandmother's potato kugel. I only liked the noodle kugel.
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
This is a special Passover episode of the show we're doing, right?
Well, that being said about the inspiration, and you don't need anything, you can just go. Sure. You mentioned the Creativity Wheel of Death.
Ah, that's what it was called, yes.
Yes, and we have it. It's right behind you, and we're going to ask you now to take a spin on it, and then...
Look out! It's right behind you!
It really is.
My back
is exactly parallel to this, so I've not seen anything that's on there.
Later in the show, you're going to do it. So, for those of you listening who don't know, this is a little spinny wheel, and it have 12 different creative prompts on it. He's going to spin it, see what he come up with, and then later he will do his creation from it. Here he go.
Here go.
Spin.
If you can't hear the details, people, it's going...
The cat is loving this. Come on. Okay.
Okay.
It says, give a motivational speech that involves hardware.
Say it one more time into the mic.
Give a motivational speech that involves hardware.
Excellent.
Okay.
What would be interesting, I know he's going to have a little bit of time. It would just be interesting in having two alternate universes, one where he had to go now and do it, and another one where he's going to do it later. I know that's not going to happen. But.
Well, choose your universe, baby.
Do you want to go right now, or do you want a little bit later? I had planned to cut us to break.
Okay, well, I'll do it later then. I'll write something up.
I just know he would do it well. I just know he would do it well right now.
He would. I know it. Later in the show, John, you is going to be doing the creative.
Yes.
Maybe you want to.
I might. Let's see what my category is.
For right now, we're going to take a quick break. I just want to say that you can tweet to us at The Giselle Show, hashtag The Giselle Show. You can email to us, studio@thegiselleshow.com. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search for The Giselle Show Podcast. And everything is at our website, podcast.thegiselleshow.com. Spread the words to your friends. You can do so right now while we're on this break. We'll be right back.